A well-known secret is that the best performing B2B companies have tightly integrated sales and marketing teams. So much so that those departments truly operate as a combined unit, which is beautifully in sync and supportive of each other along every step of the way. So you may already have a good relationship with your sales department, but how do you get that to a Formula One level? What's involved? What are the steps? And what do sales teams truly want and need? This week on the show, we'll fully lift the lid on the path that you'll need to take to achieve the deep level of integration and cooperation that's necessary to blow last year's company results out of the water. Hello and good morning. My name's James Rostance and this is the 414 Live here, live and exclusive to LinkedIn Live. For you as a professional B2B marketer, whether you work in-house at a company or agency side at an agency, or indeed if you are a company executive with a hands-on role in your company's sales and marketing activities. So, as I mentioned just then, what we're doing today is going to be looking very nicely into the benefits and the real reasons why the top performing companies in the B2B industry tightly integrate their company sales and marketing endeavors. Now, to help me with this and to look into the thing in full, today I've got a master B2B sales trainer who specializes in producing high-performance B2B sales teams by using a combination of sales train techniques and psychology. So, please welcome, joining me all the way from Southampton, Mr. Stephen Tierney. Good morning.
Morning, James. Pleasure to be here.
There you go. You're my first guest in Southampton, so you're quite literally just down the road right now, aren't you?
Yeah, we could have been doing this in the same studio.
That's a point, actually. now that I
social
think...
distanced, of course.
Yeah, well, is that still a thing? But well, here we go. No risk of infection this way. I say so.
Absolutely.
So, could we start then by me asking you, what in your experience are the challenges involved when sales and marketing teams don't collaborate?
Yes, and have I seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of this? So it's really, really, I love the topic today, James. It's really important because I've actually been through the whole journey myself from my early days in sales, where I was the salesperson. And I remember sales jobs back in call centers in Scotland many years ago when I didn't know the marketing team. I didn't know they existed. I didn't know what they'd done. I didn't know the names of any people. And so I've been through from the salesperson with the blame culture of poor leads coming through and very quickly just snapping and blaming other things, as we know that some salespeople will do because they ride a roller coaster. But I've been through that journey. But then moving on in my career to senior management and then running businesses where you see every angle and every aspect of the business, it is so important to have marketing and sales working in unison. And yeah, I can tell you about that whole journey, James.
Well, yeah, oh, please do. So what are the first things that happen when it goes wrong?
Sure. So first things first, it becomes a blame culture, as I'm sure that you've experienced all the experience that you speak to people in marketing. So salespeople like to blame marketing, first and foremost, that it causes a disconnect. So it ends up with a blame culture of everything is wrong with the leads or, you know, whatever's coming through and it's not my fault, says the salesperson. Without them knowing, because they don't see all the hard work that marketing do that brings in the leads to the funnel. I mean, everybody knows that without marketing, there is no sales. So it's so fundamentally important that we don't have a blame culture and we don't have that disconnect. So it's very also important, if there is that disconnect, that marketing are not getting the critical feedback that they need. Or they may be getting feedback which is wrongly directed at them. So that's first things first, is the culture, the blame, the disconnect causes poor feedback always going back to them. Very rarely, if they're not working in unison, will you get the salespeople or the sales teams and managers giving good positive feedback to the marketing department. You know, from my experience, they just take it as a given, and everything's because they're focused on so many other things.
So what would be the way then that marketing could work better? There we go. Or even fix this problem. How can marketing fix that?
Sure. Well, I'll come to that in a second, but let me just cover another couple of things then just before we go to that, because these are really key. And the one thing is, often if we don't work in unison with marketing, that then leaves a bad taste in marketing's mouth, where they can feel deflated. They're putting in an awful lot of hard work to actually bring the leads and bring the phone calls or whatever it is into the business. So they can feel deflated. And this causes an unhappy, unbalanced, almost lost sales and lost bottom line profits for the company is a given. So we need to realize that working in unison is so important. And here's the funny thing that I noticed. And you know, some people listen to this that run businesses and they have the two different departments will get this and understand this. I've been in businesses where if they don't work in unison, you'll always find one top salesperson who gets that they should be working in unison. And that one salesperson will maybe, you know, have chats with them, treat them nice, you know, build those relationships. And then that's all well and good because you've got one top salesperson that's doing, you know, that's converting these leads and working with them. But if nobody else does, if the company doesn't take charge of making sure that they do, often, when they find out the top salesperson is doing this, it can leave a bad taste in other salespeople's, mouths, and they think, oh, they're just giving them good leads and just doing this because he's having chats with them and, you know, and warming them up. And so it's very important that and interesting that if a top salesperson does it and converts leads and works well with them and gets more in return, why are we not doing it as a business as a whole? So you've got to be very careful that if you aren't doing that and one person is, that can blow up to the sales floor and they can see it as, they can see it as extra special treatment to that individual. When that actually, and being realistic, that individual is just doing what the business should be doing, which is working in unison with them.
I can see how that would then really quite quickly snowball in a company based on that, and that bad sentiment really taking root. When that happens...
Well, as a trainer, I've... Sorry, James, go on.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, when that happens, surely you've then got an awful uphill struggle to undo that problem, surely.
Yes, as a sales trainer... We've saw this, you know, I've seen this live and happening, and it leaves, not only is that one salesperson taking advantage of it, but then that affects, as you quite rightly said, the snowball effect of could be 10, 20, 50 other salespeople with a bad taste in their mouth that they think that individual is getting special treatment. Now, that individual may be getting special treatment, but he's caused that through the unison of the marketing and the sales. And then we have to step in and realize that this is very, very important that we get this right. So it's not only, as far as a trainer can do, we can't train the salespeople on to correct this. We need to train the management on how to correct this so that they work in unison.
I was just going to ask then, whose shoulders does that fall on then in that case?
Yes.
So it's anyone particular in management, or is this right from the top, from CEO level in your experience?
Depends on the size of the company, but very much so. You're looking at from the top of the tree right down to the senior managers, whoever's in charge of the sales floor, whoever's in charge of marketing. We should all be working in unison to make those steps happen. And if you think about it, if I tell you that, you know, I love that you had mentioned to me about F1 and how they work in unison. If we just look at Formula One for a second, Formula One teams know to win championships, every single cog in their system has to work in unison. You know, they need to work collaboratively. It all has to work in unison. Because If they don't, imagine this for a second. Let's take Lewis Hamilton. Imagine Lewis Hamilton didn't know anybody in the Mercedes team. He just got in the car and drove it. And it didn't drive particularly well, let's say. He gets out of the car at the end of the race, blames it, he tells them to fix it and blames everybody in the car and everything like that. Now, we know that's not going to happen, you know. And F1 realise how important it is to work in unison. Now, let's take this same scenario, except we know how they work, right? Mercedes will work in unison and collaboratively. Just giving you the example of that there, imagine Lewis Hamilton then knows that, say it was a chap called Sam and Daniel and his team had been spending 3 nights in a row, all up throughout the night, working on one tiny little sliver of, for example, the downforce that will help them in the corner, for example. The downforce and the performance of the car to shave one, I don't know, a hundredth of a second off of the corner. He then understands the hard work and the dedication of mastery that they're putting in. And so he's going to view things a little bit differently when things are going wrong. We've got to take that same approach in sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. Salespeople will do what they do best, but they need to understand, before they can understand what goes through marketing, until they fully understand the hard work that they put in, the trials and errors, the working that they're doing, until they get a fully fledged picture of that, then we're not going to have that working in unison. And it's a bit like stepping out of the race car and just blaming something else.
Key word, I think, for me, cropped up then when you were describing that was, it seems that it's based fundamentally on respect, but also understanding at the same time for other team members, what they're putting in and what they're also able to bring to the table. Is that fair judgment of it? Okay. So,
absolutely.
In the process of integrating sales and marketing teams together, what's the first step that you take in making that happen?
Well, the first step the businesses must take, you know, and if I'm working with them, is that we make the decision. So we set our intentions. So that's first and foremost with anything that we're going to do. We realize there is a problem or there's a challenge, and we have to make the decision and set the intentions of what we're about to embark on. The next thing is that when we get that plan put together with management, then we're looking at, and this is what I say to people, don't go to your teams, you know, the soldiers on the floor, the salespeople and the marketing people, soldiers, and don't tell them, as a manager would say, with the numbers, right, these guys are putting in this effort here and doing X amount, and that's why you need to understand what you're getting in return is X. That doesn't move people. You know, as you and I will know, James, what moves people is stories. Now, if we can tell, you've got to understand that the salespeople and the marketing people are not senior leaders in management at that point. So we need to, first and foremost, if we are going to do it and we've made the decision, and then we do this collaborative meeting with them, we have to tell them stories which moves them. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, and that's a big mistake I see a lot of leaders make, is they don't tell them emotional stories that people go, do you know what? I fully understand that now and I get that. They tell them too much the numbers and what we need to do and why. But why not tell them through a power of a story? You know, using, for example, an F1 story or something like that, that people just get and are moved emotionally. Very, very important and very powerful. So that... Sorry, you're going to say something,
Jim? Oh, I was actually just chuckling away then. I think it's an awesome example of how to lead and inspire. And I can't imagine, I don't know, any of our previous, our country's previous great achievements would have been done with a PowerPoint presentation and some key facts laid out.
So true. So yeah. True. And even powerful, we learn that from selling. So, you know, we train people. One company that I worked with, we took every single objection that would come up. So we had a brainstorming session on what are the objections that stop us from selling. And then we decided, I mean, there's different ways to overcome objections, but we decided that one way would be to have a story that could overcome every single one. And some of the stories were phenomenal. Like, it was a software that was, some people, one of the objectives would be, your software's too niche for our business. You know, our business is too niche, it wouldn't work. Well, we had a story that actually worked with a company who thought the same, and they sold, I kid you not, they sold yellow submarines. And it worked for them. And we had that true story that worked for them. So when we look at, you know, we want to collaborate market, we know how important it is to collaborate marketing and sales. If we are going to make the first step, which is make the decision, mm-hmm. set the intentions of why and what we're going to do, and the second step is having that first meeting with them all, don't speak to them in numbers and graphs and, you know, tell them a story that moves them emotionally of the why, and give them some examples like as we've come up with F1 and things like that. People, salespeople and the people, the soldiers as I call them on the floor will understand that, and that will move them more than any numbers or telling them what the hard work that they put in. Really, really important.
I was going to pick up on you saying understanding then. I've got a question for you, but I don't want to interrupt you in terms of, could you carry on and we'll come back to understanding in just a sec.
Yeah, so I was just going to say, you know, we have to have nowadays a no-blame culture. And I'll bring this up and I'll bring it back because it's so important. Sales and marketing, first and foremost, if they don't collaborate, then we have disconnect and we have a blame culture. If we collaborate, that just doesn't mean that we're going to instantly get it working. So once again, telling a story of, and I'll give you a real life story that I've been through. One of my friends, he owns and runs a high net worth insurance company. And he said to me one day that he was taking all his clients to the Bentley factory, you know, a tour of it, and if I would like to come. And I said, I'd love to come. So I've never been there. So they all went up in a bus and I got to meet a lot of high net worth individuals, and it was very interesting to see how they thought. But also when we got to the factory, one of the key things that aligns Bentley all the way through is the craftsmanship and the no blame culture. Mm. And I didn't even give this a thought, but they say that every single Bentley that leaves that factory has to leave perfect. And so, you know, each part that is put onto the car is signed by the person, the craftsman who's done that part. And so they have a no-blame culture. If someone makes a mistake or it's not quite right, then they will own up. Yeah, and it may mean that it has to move back a couple of different sections. So other people have to rework on it. But there's a no-blame culture. And they say that from the start. They want people, you know, to understand that it doesn't matter if you don't get it perfect. We need to just put it back and have another go at it. And it was just fascinating to see how they worked in that no-blame culture, you know, by signing each piece that they put on to make sure that the standards that they've looked at is the standards that Bentley expects. And interestingly enough, everything to the finest detail in there. Interesting story on that was they took us through to the room where they keep all the wood paneling that gets put in to the cars. And there was a framed wood paneling that came off one of the machines. And it weirdly had what looked like a skull shaped. The wood had turned into what looked like a skeleton sort of skull. And so they refused to put that into a car just through the fact of, you know, bad luck. You know, they didn't like that. They said, that's it, we'll start again. Let's get another piece and start again. They just didn't like the fact that it had, you know, what looked, it had formed a skull in the grain. And the one person who did visit the factory and asked to buy that was David Beckham.
Okay.
And I guess he likes skulls, yeah? So, but they actually, interestingly, wouldn't sell it to him. You know, they'd stood by that, you know, they didn't want, that wasn't for sale. It was, to them, it was just a bit of bad luck and everything has to be perfect. So no blame culture up there is a great lesson for us all.
I can well imagine as well that that's also going to lead to awesome job satisfaction and in turn pride for everyone working there because of that ethos being so strong and a part of what they do. Okay.
Very much so. In fact, just on that note, I think when I was there, the chap who puts the leather onto the steering wheel, I believe he was in his late 60s, and he still does it the same way he done it many, many years ago, decades ago, with a fork. So he will actually fold the leather in, handcrafted with a little fork that he uses. So I haven't tried it because I don't have a Bentley myself, but they say that if you have a fork, that you can usually line up the holes in the steering column, the leather steering column. So yes, absolute loved his job. Had been putting them on the same way for decades. Very, very interesting.
That's cool. I need to do a quick shout out to Ola Rafferty, Paul Simon, The Grit Show, and Sue Moore. I said I would give those guys a shout out. And coming back now to you mentioned about understanding in the whole field. What do you advocate that marketing would be much better placed, but also would do well to understand more about sales teams and what they do?
I think it goes both ways. I believe that sales teams really need to understand marketing, and marketing needs to understand sales teams. And that's why we've spoke all the way through this about unison and collaborative. I see so many companies that I've worked with where they're not in unison. One does a job, and their job is to get as many leads through to the sales as possible, and sales need trained up to convert as many leads as possible. They're missing a huge, huge trick here, and that is what we've been speaking about. So it's very important for them to understand sales and the challenges that salespeople go through, and that's also the good and the bad. So I would say that, you know, once we've made the decision and set the intentions, once we've had that initial meeting and moved them emotionally, and we've created that no blame culture, then we need to look at meetings of collaboration and celebration. Mm-hmm. So they need to understand, you know, marketing needs to understand the challenges from salespeople, and salespeople need to have that mentality that I learned this from a UFC, an Ultimate Fighting Championship trainer, where he said, you're either winning or you're learning. And marketing needs to learn from sales, you know, but doing it in the right way. So when they understand each other, the first step, they are then open to conversations to teach each other on, you know, what it takes. And to do so, they both need to talk and give feedback and not criticism or blame. So it's just feedback. You know, you're winning or you're learning. So it's very important for the salespeople to feedback to them in a positive way what needs improved. And it's also very important, as I said to you, to celebrate what is working well, because success leaves clues. And that's the thing that people don't realize. As salespeople, we're always focused on what we haven't done. And when we get a sale, we move on. Well, success leaves clues. And, you know, I don't know any salespeople or sales managers, many of them out there, that will actually think, okay, that was great. What did you do to close that? Where did that lead come from? And how did marketing get that? It's starting to think the wider picture of not just your area that you're in charge of, but how can we work in unison? And as I said, you described it perfectly with the F1 scenario. That is really what we need to be looking at, to have a high-performing sales team, but high-performing marketing, because they're the start of the funnel.
Right. Now, what you made me think of there then in that case is, yes, so when a sales team has success in something that they've done, just like the Formula One example, they then look back at how they came to that and to see how they can either replicate it or perhaps make further improvements based on what they've just discovered.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Now, if there's a disconnect, all that sales will get is that lead was rubbish. It's instant blame. Never me, it's the lead. When we're working in unison, now you've got it. You understand that we now need to share success. What was good about it? But they've been moved emotionally, and they know the people and they know the hard work that goes in. So now they're attached to doing so. So you have to get these in the right order. And you're right, it's very, very important for them to give success feedback as well as improvements, I like to call them. So I used to say that we're going to have meetings on success and improvements. It was never really negative description of these, as you notice. It's, let's have another meeting here, we'll go over the successes, and now we need to go over what needs improved. You know, what are we doing that we can do better? What would you like from us as salespeople? And the marketing team saying, what would you like us? What can we do better that, you know, that you would like from us? But until they understand that, you know, what goes into all of that hard work, James, they're never going to get to that stage.
Well, in that case, what would you recommend for a structure for this to happen? Because I'm mindful that, say, they've closed some incredible deal, which has been as a result of marketing once again doing just some awesome stuff in marketing, because that's what marketers do. How would they?
I'm scratching my face there.
What sort of structure would you recommend for this review process to actually happen? Because I appreciate that if it's just done ad hoc, you're probably going to miss a lot. So what do you recommend to...
Well, let's look at what we've covered so far. Yes, absolutely. So let's look at what we've covered so far. We've got them to make the decision and see that it's a challenge and that they need to set the intention of what they're going to do. They've had that meeting to start with. You know, they've moved the people emotionally. They both parties understand. Mm. And then they've got the no blame culture. They're winning or learning. So we have regular feedback. Now, let's take it back to the F1 example, because it's a really nice example. Do you think that when they win, one of the Grand Prix, that they just leave it? They'll move on to the next one. Oh, we're winning. Let's not discuss anything. I can't see that really happening. I can't see them not sitting down and saying, right, what worked really well and what improvements do we still need to do? So it's the exact same. When you're looking at businesses that have sales and marketing departments, they have to regularly, and they have to be scheduled, and that boils down to management. Because there's nothing worse than, you know, a business will make this decision to do this, maybe potentially after hearing, you know, this podcast, and they do it, they follow through, mm-hmm. but then after 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, they forget about it. They get more busy in other areas and they don't follow through on it. It has to be scheduled as part of the cogs in the system. And as I said to you, let's take the F1 example. You know, when they win an F1, they're not going to just skip by that and say, okay, well, we've not got another race for 2 weeks. We've done well. Let's keep going. They're going to review success. Because once again, and that's the perfect example, success leaves clues. So they're going to review that. And that's going to happen after every race. And you bet your boots that they have that scheduled where the driver knows that's where they go at what time and that's what they talk about.
Perfect.
And that's what businesses need to do as well.
In that case, it would be good right now. I'll say to everyone watching right now, if you have a question that you'd like to put to Stephen about implementing this into your company, or maybe problems that you've had in your company in the past where you've had frustrations either working with sales or indeed you've wanted to move this forward. If there's anything you'd like Stephen to perhaps help with and answer your questions on, please put them in the comments section now and I will put those to Stephen shortly. All right. So Stephen, I'd love to know a really good example of perhaps one of your favorites where you've instigated and implemented a change from a previously dysfunctional sales and marketing relationship to one that works really well. And could you talk us through what happened and what was the result?
Yeah, sure. So there was an insurance company with a very, very big call center we were working with. So you're talking about the market team, I think, had about 60 people. So we're not talking small numbers here, and the salespeople were more than that. So we're talking about two huge teams here. But once again, to my surprise, I go in there to train the team. But first and foremost, let's do a whole dig under every scenario and let's see where we're going wrong. Because there's many, many different things. It could be management. It could be the salespeople. It could be how they've been trained. It could be the marketing. It could be the collaboration. And we found that nobody knew. Some of them didn't even know the marketing existed, the marketing team existed. They didn't know who they were that sat over there. So we knew right away that there was, and there was also this blame culture of, you know, you've heard me speaking about it earlier, the leads, you know, the blame of the leads at the time. And, you know, I could sell if these leads were better. These aren't, you know. So, but nobody was working in unison to feed back to get some answers from this. So we put together a whole training program, but we also put together what we believe had to be done first, which was looking at marketing and sales working together collaboratively. And that's why I love this topic that you brought up today, because that's what we done with them. And everything I've told you we went through, You know, we moved them with the emotional stories. We got them to understand. We got them working together in little exercises in unison. And we got salespeople to present back in the little groups what the marketing people that they were in the group with done. And we got the similar, the marketing people to present back the challenges and what the salespeople faced. And it was very powerful and it brought them together. But once we had that, we had the first cog in the system, if you like. Once they were working better, you had the sales team shift their mindsets. You had the marketing people shift their mindsets about the salespeople. It wasn't like us and them. It was a togetherness. And that then sets up the training to be a lot easier. And it did. What we done with the training was, I think at the end, I don't know the exact numbers on it, it was a little while ago, James, but I think we increased the sales by about 24% within 3 months, which was huge. So it all starts, you know, from what we're talking about today, understanding and not having blame.
Nice. I was just going to ask, what was the time scales involved in that? But 3 months for a turn.
3 months,
actual results. Okay.
Yeah. You will get results once it's implemented with the, you know, when the management of the company and the business is, and we're all bought into it. That's why I say make the decision, set your intentions. When we're all bought into it, togetherness, because there has to be that togetherness with the management team first. Before we can push the togetherness on to the salespeople and the marketing people. So, you know, once you get that, as soon as you get that, you can move pretty fast.
Right, okay. What would you recommend as a course of action for people watching right now? And bearing in mind, the audience generally is in B2B marketing with some in company executive positions. For someone in marketing, what would you recommend as their course of action to instigate this kind of change? Who should they speak to or what should they prepare?
Well, if someone's listening to this and they're not of management level or senior management level, they should be speaking to the management and senior management level, maybe even showing them your show, James, because it may be the case that once again, they are so tunnel visioned in their own performance of their own team that they've never even thought about the other team that exists, you know, over that wall, if you like, or whatever, you know. But so they have to speak to management and they need to share this topic that we're talking about with management. It may be that management do it, but they don't do it regular enough, and maybe it's time to revisit it. So I say the first step is, you know, if you're a marketing person or a salesperson, is talking to management about this. And if you're a manager or a senior leader, it's revisiting that. Are you doing it good enough? Are you doing it at all? And are you doing it regular enough? Is it something that we need to revisit? Because I'll tell you right now, it can make a huge difference to the bottom line profits. It has a knock-on effect if you work your way back. So from the profits, the salespeople being happier, selling more, giving feedback to marketing, they're happier with the salespeople, they're actually getting feedback on success. It has that knock-on effect, which will bring them bottom-line profits. It's very, very important.
Perfect. In terms of questions and responses, we've got a solid thumbs up from Joe Hilda, solid thumbs up from Lucy Heavens, hello, and Jason Wiles, clap. Yes, and we've got a green clap from Jason Wiles. Hey, Jason.
Thank you, Jason.
I'm all for succinct feedback right there. Paul Simon asks, actually, and he touches on, I believe, what you mentioned earlier, which is, he says, understanding and not having a blame culture. Is communication and a regular team brief the best answer?
Yes and no. And let me answer that for you. Communication is the key word. So well done on that. Communication. As we know, we've been doing it through this podcast. F1, the communication in F1. Is probably one of the best that you'll get for those leading teams. So communication is key, but it's the right communication. I've seen our business having to work with the leadership team and the management team because their communication meetings were not at the level to make this change. And what they were doing was actually irating the people So people were there were losing respect, and so it was just sometimes I've saw it where it's a tick box exercise for management to go through this. All right, we need to do this now. Let's have a meeting, and they tick the box that they had the meeting. That's not what it's about. Once again, we go back to working together. It's very, very important that the communication is regular, but it's good communication that moves the dial.
Nice. Okay, in that case, I guess I should ask you as one final question, is what would be the one key takeaway that you would like the audience to have? And with that, maybe sure. Something a bit motivational for in all of this.
Motivational, yes. Oh, well. The one key thing I think it's been described best just by one of your listeners there, and that is communication. But I would say it's the right communication. Now, motivational-wise, I just want people to understand this for a second. If we do this well, you will have better functioning business, you will have happier people, and you will have more bottom-line profits. So the key thing for me is having happier people within your business, especially if you're a business owner or if you're someone that's working a business. I mean, I'm sure that some of our listeners have been there where they're in a business where they don't really enjoy it. And I hate to say it, but sometimes a lot of that came from the leadership or the management or the senior management all the way down. So motivational-wise, we can change, and we can change in an instant. It's the time when the leaders or the people decide to set their intentions and make the decision. And then the other key thing, as the one of your listeners said there, is the right communication. It's communicating it right. Any company can do this, James. Any company can do this. You know, when we go in and work with companies, I've realized that any company can do this, but the buy-in from the leadership team and the right communication has to be done. So sometimes there's a lot of training needed with the leadership team to get this through, but anybody can do it. And when everybody's bought into it, it can happen very fast.
Stephen, that's absolutely perfect. Thank you ever so much. Seriously, this has been really strong today. And you know what? Where should people go, actually, if they would like to connect with you and also maybe start their journey with you or even get some further information on this subject?
Sure. Well, they can go to the website. Our training company is Mindcell. So that's www.mindcell.co.uk. Or they can follow me on Instagram, Stephen Tierney. That's Stephen with a PH, T-I-E-R-N-E-Y underscore, Stephen Tierney underscore.
Perfect stuff. There we go. Well, Stephen Tierney, live from the most beautiful city on the central south coast of England, Southampton. Right there.
I would agree.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, Stephen, thank you ever so much for joining me on the show today. This has been a sincere pleasure. All right. And great perfect. Job. And if you've enjoyed watching, then please do check this out, web address on screen. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already, www.the414.net for all previous episodes and subscription options. You can even watch the video version of the podcast if you subscribe to Apple Podcasts. That's what I do, just to check the show. Right, there we go. So in the meantime, if you'd like to join us next week, then please do. This has been the 414, the show where we speak with some of the greatest and most interesting minds in B2B marketing every single week. There we go. My name is James Rostance. Thank you very much for watching, and I'll see you next week.